Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We are super excited because it's mailbag day. Darren and I have been doing Ag PhD workshops all winter long. Have just a few left on Thursday. We're down in Gilbert, Arizona next week. We are in Morton, Minnesota on Tuesday, and then we've got a couple in Baltic, South Dakota, are on our field day site, on our farm, at the end of next week. And March 7th, we're going to be up in Winnipeg. So if you want to check any of those out, we've got more information at agphd.com, and you can also pre-register there as well. So let's get right to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
First one comes from Chris in Wyoming, and Chris says, just wanted to pick your brain on this. I hear you talking about soil samples, and often on your TV show you show samples, and they say 0 to 6 inches.
Yep.
But I noticed when your gal on the step probe out in the field and the Case IH scout does her sampling, it looks like she's going 12 inches deep all the way down to the step on the probe. I'm just wondering, what do you normally do on your farm?
There is no such thing as normal on our farm because we are trying so many different things, doing a lot of experiments. So I will say that commonly over the years we've run 6 inches, but we do a fair amount of 12-inch work. And the reason why we do is because we put a lot of fertility down at 8 to 10 inches deep. So we've done that two different ways. We've done a 0 to 6 inch and a 6 to 12, or we've just done a 0 to 12. Personally, I suggest for most people, they do a 0 to 6 and then take a few, not a lot, but a few 6 to 12 inch tests. Generally speaking, most people have not been putting fertility down in that 6 to 12 inch range. If you are, I would suggest you either go to this type of method, 6 to 12 inch samples occasionally, or do all 0 to 12 inch samples. It's up to you, whatever you want to do.
All right, thanks for the question, Chris. I got one from Darwin in Kansas. He said, we streamed down 32% UAN back the 1st of November, and here it's 3.5 months later, and we still haven't received any moisture. How much of that 32% is still out there?
I fear that there's some, I mean, that there's a fair amount of loss.
Yeah, you could do much, some, you could do some soil sampling and see what's left out there. That would be one way you could go.
Yeah, but let's put it this way. This is one of the reasons why we are always concerned about laying fertilizer on top of the soil. In arid climates, it gets challenging because we need moisture to now move it into the soil if we're not doing that with tillage. I think about like our cornfields, for example. You know, very often we'll go a month in the middle of the summer with no rain. Well, if that's going to happen, I like to put our citrus nitrogen in with Coulters. If we're going to have rain relatively soon, yeah, it's fine to use, many different methods, dragging a hose or using a Y drop or whatever you choose to do.
But yeah, there's a lot of different ways to put on in. I mean, you could use a Coulter, you could use a knife, you could use, like say stream bars.
Stream bars in corn, but yes, stream bars in wheat, yes.
Right.
The other thing is, I was just talking to a guy yesterday who had a problem where he showed me some pictures from last summer where he'd stream barred wheat and it was really burning. And he said this was after he had let fertilizer sit in the tank overnight. And I said, ooh, there's the problem. Most likely some chemical got pulled out of your spray tank. So I'll tell you what we do on our farm. I try to keep a sprayer exclusively to wheat until we're done with wheat for the season. And then we can go on to corn and beans because I get so worried about cross-contamination. And what happens in poly tanks is there's stuff that gets stuck in those pores, and it does not take much Roundup to hurt wheat. It doesn't take much Roundup to hurt grass crops that are not tolerant to Roundup. So we have to be really careful about those things. So I said either I'd get a different sprayer and keep, have two sprayers going, one on wheat, one on other stuff, or I'd get an injection system. Now, one other way to do this is you just have to make sure your spray tank is completely empty every night. So I realize we're getting totally off topic with that particular question, but that just reminded me of that I just talked to a guy about yesterday when we did our soils clinic up in Grand Forks. He showed me those pictures and I go, oh, that's too bad. The other thing is whenever there is wind and you're stream barring, well, now in effect, you may be broadcasting. So you got to be real careful about what you're doing, how you're doing it out in the fields.
Right. I got a question. This one, kind of a little bit longer question. This one comes from John in southeast Minnesota. He said, we have changed on our farm from no-till to zone-till, and now we've got a large cattle expansion, so we've got manure every year and high levels of phosphorus. So we want to get away from using 10-30-4-0, but we'd still like to get a fast start for our corn plants. We've got pretty heavy soils. Some we have tiled, some we still don't, so we need some tiling out there. But what we're wondering about, we've used liquefied urea before in a foliar feed. We're thinking about using a little bit of that with pop-up to enhance emergence in cold soil. We're using feed-grade urea as the source. Just wondering what your thought of that is.
Nope, I absolutely wouldn't do that. We are not big on putting nitrogen down with that seed, so that could be very harmful for you. I wouldn't do that at all. Now, if you want to use a product that is very low salt and has a little bit of nitrogen in there, that's fine. But if you start talking much nitrogen at all, I mean, even a gallon or two of this liquefied urea in furrow, I would fear for my seed. So no possible way that I'm going to do that.
Yeah, you want to be really careful. We don't want to hurt anything. And I get that having a little bit of fertilizer out there might help jump some more of the plants out of the ground a little quicker, but you got to be real
careful. Especially when you're talking lots of manure. Over time, you're going to have your ground all loaded up anyway. So I'm not that worried about the nitrogen part.
Okay, one more here. This is Brandt, and he said, I went to your soils clinic down in Garden City, Kansas. Really enjoyed it. I get my test done at a different lab. I know you use Midwest Labs. Are there different testing methods for micros, and can you correlate them?
Malic 3 correlated to DTPA is really difficult. Many of the labs that run DTPA, the numbers are fairly similar, but not necessarily. I mean, it all depends on how long they're leaving things in solution and everything else. So I would just say you get with a lab, you kind of stick with that lab.
All right, taking your calls and questions all throughout the show today. Stay tuned.
One thing growers need to succeed is freedom to choose what they put in their fields. That's why FMC Freedom Pass Agronomic Rewards make it easy and economical to pair your favorite seed brand with products proven to protect crops throughout the season. Choosing Authority brand herbicides and other proven FMC products pays more than ever before. Calculate your potential incentive at fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass today. Always read and follow label directions. Authority brand herbicides are not registered for sale or use in California.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts, available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
What if you couldn't hear 70% of this commercial? You'd miss a saying that would understand talking about, which frustrating, to say the least. The same thing can happen to the nitrogen in the soil, where up to 70% of nitrogen loss occurs. Instinct and NSERF maximize your nitrogen application, so your corn will give you the max in return. Get the whole story at maxinmaxout.com.
With Preaxor's Xemium brand fungicide in your soybeans, it's hard to know which comes first, disease control or plant health. Preaxor fungicide is proven to deliver both with consistent performance, so your soybean crops get plant health benefits like growth efficiency and stress tolerance, plus longer-lasting disease protection, all contributing to maximum yield potential. Grow smart with BASF and Preaxor fungicide. Talk to your retailer today. BASF, we create chemistry. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're doing a mailbag show. I've gotten so many questions in that we want to try to get through as many of those as we can. And we're taking your agronomy questions, radio@agphd.com, if you'd like to send them in. Or you can give us a phone call, 844-44-AG-PHD. We also get a number of grain marketing questions. So we brought Scott Harms on with us with Grain PhD and Archer Financial Services. Scott, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Hi, I'd love to hear. Glad to be here.
All right. Now, one of the questions that we've gotten, the grain market's certainly gotten a lift as of late here with soy meal and soybeans. The question is, Scott, what's the driver behind this?
Well, it's a few different factors. Obviously, the lead factor being weather situation in Argentina. It's turned dry in that area. I mean, the rally started with some short covering ahead of last week's USDA report. There was some supportive news in the USDA report in that they cut Argentine production and they cut Argentine crush in the meal. They don't export a lot of beans. They export a lot of soybean meal, so that translated into a large soybean meal rally. Obviously, that is tied to the weather. And then since that news came out last Thursday, we had a big move on that day, but every day since, we've been pushing prices higher based on continued concerns about weather. They're in a pattern that it's very dry. There's not a lot of chances for rain in the next 7 days. Some weather guys are going out as far as the end of the month, as far as the pattern continuing as it is. And I think you have some people projecting what would the size of their crop be if indeed it stays dry for that period. They are in their reproductive time. It's a very critical time for them. So this rally has been led largely by the soybean meal trade, which pushes beans along. We've had meal rally $45 in just the last six trading sessions. Beans have rallied nearly a little over 45 cents in the last six trading sessions. And it will continue just as it continues, just as the weather market is in the U.S. It'll continue until it doesn't. If there is better chances of rain that come into the forecast, we will start to give up some ground. But in the near term, it looks like it's onward and upward.
All right. So what should producers be doing right now? Is this a time to make a percentage of sales, or is it a time to just sit back and wait?
Yeah, I think in the soybean market, because we've seen such a large advance, I think this is a market where you just have to have your finger on the sale button. You have to be moving a little bit of inventory, but do it keeping in mind that you need to have some powder dry. Again, project, this week we're gonna add a nice value to prices, but we could do the exact same thing next week if there's no rain in the forecast. So you just need to price a little bit each week or on strong up days. Let some inventory go. Don't go hog wild, however, because there is some real upside if indeed this issue continues in that area of the world. So absolutely be in sell mode in beans gradually and incrementally on the way up. Corn market, it is following along to a degree, a little more lethargically. At this point, we're not willing to advance sales at these price levels. We think we have another 8 to 10 cents upside before we'll start pulling the trigger. So I think having some offers in place or getting some option strategies where you're setting a price floor on another 8 to 10 cents advance, is the right decision. But again, corn is another situation where it may end up being up 10 cents this week. It may be up another 10 cents the next week. So make sure you keep some powder dry. But I think these are good opportunities to do some winter pricing.
All right. So another question that we're getting a lot of, Scott, is from the guys that have been making sales all the way, and now they're like, oh, no, I should have held out and waited to make sales later. Should they be getting back into the market to try to take advantage of this rally?
Yeah, there's a couple of things that have been going on in the marketplace. There are some, because of this price advancement, there is going to be obviously that urge to move some inventory out of the bin, and there are still cheap strategies to reopen that inventory. We've had some different advisory service look at the July corn in the corn market, looking at the July $4 calls. These are calls that you just invest in. They reopen the upside The cost, current cost, is around 10, so it's 10 cents, so it's $500 a contract. It's a cheap way to reopen that upside in the bean market. You can do the same strategy with a 1080 call in the July beans. That you're covered through the, you've reopened your upside through the end of June, and that cost would be about $1,000 a contract. But those are the simplest ways to reopen the upside. There's no additional cost when you're just buying a call option. There's no additional margin fees. You just have that upside initial cost, and then you're participating in the upside. We're running into the same situation here that we did in November, where there's some basis contracts that are going to be coming up due at the end of the month, and we had a lot of interest from our customer base. What should they do? Should they kick the can down the road and move those basis contracts on out to the July contract? Well, that's going to cost you the, you know, 15 to 16 cent spread plus whatever the cost of your local elevator is to move those contracts. So I think there is a strong consideration for going ahead and moving that inventory, put an end to those contracts, and then spend 10 cents re-owning those strategies, re-owning that inventory in these options, and it's a much more palatable move.
All right, we've also been getting a lot of questions, Scott, just about what is grain PhD, what should I know about it? Get questions from people saying, wow, I feel like the only one who doesn't know much about markets, but when we get into conversations with other farmers, we learn quickly they don't know much about them either. So what's going on with grain PhD? What should people know?
Well, Grain PhD is a great product. It's six to eight months old now. It's an educational tool. It's an interactive tool. You can ask questions to some of the experts, get some of the questions answered. But primarily, it's there for producers to expand their knowledge in using of, you know, in marketing tools, as well as for those that need to get started and learn the terminology. It has some real educational features on there. What we've been able to find from a lot of people is they want to advance their marketing knowledge. They want to get more involved in the market. They don't know where to start, and this is a good place to start. You get the terminology down. You get some of the basic strategies in place. What you can add to your marketing plan, and then you can reach out take it as far as you want to go in your operation. If you need more professional analysis, continue to push the bar down the road. But it's a great stepping off point, and the people that have been interactive, have been working with it so far, have really found the product to be very useful.
Yeah, it's been quite a response with Grain PhD. If you have questions and you're listening today, just check it out at grainphd.com. Happy to have Scott Harms with Archer Financial and with Grain PhD with us again today. Scott, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
All right, thank you.
All right, Brian, let's jump back into another question here, and this is one that Gary sent in. He said, do you guys still recommend your 3 pre-emerge strategy if we get a lot of springtime moisture? I'm in Montana, and I'm close to an experiment station, and we had a lot of snow this year. Now, over the last 10 years, we've had a couple of years with 8 or 9 inches of rain within 3 days in June.
Yep.
And on the sandier soils,
that's common.
I'm kind of curious what you think about this.
Well, how sandy is sandy? If you tell me what the CEC is, that helps me out a lot. It was funny. Yesterday, we were up in Grand Forks, and a guy was trying to tell me that he called sandy ground, it was like a 33 CEC, but he had some other that was around 40 CEC. And I go, well, to you, that might seem like light ground. That 33, or another guy, it was 22, I think, CEC, and he was calling that light ground. And I go, well, that's actually heavy ground. So to you, it might seem light, but it's really not. But anyway, in terms of do we still recommend the 3 pre's? Absolutely. Prowl isn't going anywhere, or Treflan or Sonalan. Valor and Authority aren't going anywhere. Yes, Metribuzin can leach, but it's still going to have some impact. We want to get it out there if we can. That's the best way to go in soybeans.
We're taking your calls and questions all throughout our show today at 844-44-AG-PHD. Stay tuned.
What's the quickest way to ruin a nice summer day? Seeing glyphosate-resistant volunteer corn get past your defenses and show up in your fields. It's more than a nuisance, and it'll cause yield loss if you don't take care of it soon. So how do you cover the gap between glyphosate and a resistant weed like volunteer corn? With the fast-acting post-emergence control of SelectMax herbicide with Inside technology. SelectMax has a unique formulation that delivers powerful performance and excellent crop safety. It's the fastest clethodim product in the market, so you can fight back against volunteer corn immediately. No matter what weed threat you're facing, the best solution is a diversified management program to cover the gap and stop resistant weeds. Valent USA Corporation has several fast-acting, broad-spectrum post-emergence control solutions, including SelectMax, Cobra Herbicide, and Resource Herbicide. Talk with your retailer today to find out which one is right for your field, and visit valent.com/coverthegap for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
Do you have your grain marketing plan ready for this year? Hi, I'm Darren Hefty. One of the most common questions we get at our winter workshops each year is, what should I do with my grain marketing? That's why we created Grain PhD. Give you the information and resources you need to be as successful in your grain marketing as you are in raising your crops. Plus, if you attend our Ag PhD workshops this winter, Grain PhD marketing specialists will be on hand to answer your questions and help create an effective marketing plan for you. Visit grainphd.com to learn how Grain PhD can help you with your grain marketing in 2018.
What makes Phytogen brand varieties flat out better in West Texas? We ask growers like Lance Williams how Phytogen is helping his cotton farm thrive.
We grow cotton in the Texas Panhandle for limited water use. It's a good fit for us with the rotation to corn and dry land. It's the best money-making crop we've got. Phytogen has allowed us to expand our cotton acres and grow because of new herbicide tolerances, and we are able to grow more cotton efficiently and effectively. Phytogen seed has taken us to the next level with fiber quality. We've seen loan values that we've never seen before with it, and our yields are good as well. Phytogen varieties have early season vigor like no other. They will come up in cool, wet soils and also have great storm tolerance in the fall. Bottom line, we make more money with Phytogen seed. That's how it's flat out better for us.
Lance Williams is thriving, and with Phytogen brand varieties, so can you. And now Enlist Duo Herbicide is registered for use on Phytogen cottonseed with the Enlist cotton trait. Visit Phytogen.com to find your local Phytogen representative and learn more.
Why treat your entire field for white mold if only parts of it are affected? Contan soil fungicide sprayed this fall after harvest is the only proactive way to reduce white mold potential for future crops. Locating and spot treating your affected acres with Contans every year and every crop is an affordable and effective control strategy for white mold. Contans fungicide attacks and reduces the sclerotia bodies in the soil that cause the problem. Scout the symptoms and treat the problem this fall with Contans. To find out more, go to sipcamrotam.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. I'm Darren Hefty, along with my brother Brian.
So next on the show, we have Wade Barnes with Farmer's Edge. And the reason why we asked Wade to be on today is I just had a couple of questions because, Wade, I saw that you had a big announcement here in terms of your company with an insurance company. So can you talk to us a little about that?
Sure. Yeah. Farmers Edge and a global reinsurer by the name of Partnery have formed a partnership to go out and help utilize the farmers' data to, you know, enhance the insurance products for farmers kind of all across the globe.
So what does that mean exactly? How's that going to work? Like, let's say that, well, like for us on our farm, we use Farmer's Edge. So we've got our soil test data. We've got our yield data in there. You can see the satellite imagery, all that kind of thing. How would that impact a farmer like us?
Well, I think what's happening is that insurance companies in agriculture, no different than anywhere else in the world, is understanding that the data that's being collected, you know, really help with risk management. And I think that, you know, really strong farmers are, you know, can utilize that data to get better insurance products. And I think that, you know, Partneries identified the fact is that some of the products that are out there for growers aren't the best fit for the individual growers. And if you can use this great farm data that we have now to fine tune and build products that have a better fit for the individual grower, give them better coverage, you know, maybe essentially start to lower the cost of insurance probably in the future. I think that that's really exciting. And, you know, you're seeing this in insurance in other sectors. And now with agriculture, you know, having good data to enable these products that come to market has been really difficult. And, you know, now we think with the Farmer's Edge solution, it enables an insurance company to do something.
Okay. So with this then, does it work like that? I'm just trying to figure out how exactly this works. So if I say, hey, I might be interested in having them give me a bid on insurance, and I would like them to look at my data, and then they can go ahead and do that, or what's the process exactly?
Well, I mean, I think right now, you know, depending on, you know, Partnery is the reinsurer, so depending on who you're working with, if the insurance company utilizes Partnery, then essentially what could happen is that, you know, there could be products that could be a better fit for you, but you as the grower, you know, will choose whether you're going to share your data with the insurance company to bring you those newer products. So at the end of the day, the grower has kind of all the control. I think in the future, you know, you as companies that will come to you and say, look, if you share your data with us, we'll be able to develop products that are more tailor-made. And I think it just puts the farmer in a much stronger control position of his own destiny, and also, and you know, enables the grower to get some other value out of his data. And we've been talking about for a long time that your data is going to create value for you. And I think rather than just monetizing and selling data for a couple of bucks an acre, if you can utilize your data at your own choice, that suddenly an insurance company can build a product that's got way better coverage for you or has a better fit for you, that's another really good use of data. And I think that insurance is the first wave. I think farm lending is going to be the next. I think you're going to see this in grain marketing and contracting kind of going forward.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, one of the concerns is having, let's say, reliable data, number one, and having good access to the data to give it to, I mean, how do you give your data as a farmer to your banker, to your insurance company, anything like that? Because we've talked about that ourselves on our own farm, where we're investing lots of money in things like drain tile and fertility and everything else we can possibly do so that ground is super productive. Well, it's changed our yield levels, but right. You know, the problem is everybody is still looking at, I mean, the insurance company is still looking at county average stuff. My bank is still going to look at us compared to other farmers. Well, if I've literally now got different ground because of all the investments I've made, then that's a step change.
That is exactly what Partnery understood. When we talked to them, we said exactly we showcased the same thing, that, you know, you're using 10-year historical information and it's not relevant anymore.
Yep.
And they're saying to us, well, how else can we do this? And what we're saying is, look, when you have access to this type of data, you're seeing farmers actually make big changes that's affecting their productivity. But at the same time, you guys aren't covering them in order to do this. And I mean, good on the insurance company. They're saying, well, look, we can make those changes. The issue is, at the end of the day, it might not be wide scoping. I mean, at the end of the day, that this might not be the best fit for every single farmer. But I think the guys that are making huge investments to change the productivity, this could be a really significant impact for them.
Yeah, I've had a few farmers suggest that same type of thing. Like we were just in North Dakota yesterday, so that's top of mind for me. And if you put drain tile in, well, obviously you have a lot less chance that your water table is going to be high, your planting is going to be delayed, your yields are going to be lower. So theoretically then they say, well, I put tile in, so now my insurance costs should go down. How come it's not? Well, for exactly what you just mentioned. Well, they look at 10-year average stuff instead of looking at what you invested in and looking at the crop now versus the crop in any year in the past.
Well, and even take it one step further, if you're trying to go to your banker and trying to sell them on the fact that you need to put, you know, tile in and he needs to support you, well, I mean, that's a great investment on the farm. But if you have the data to showcase that, you know, here I can showcase you data in my area where tile makes a difference, and over the last 5 years, you know, it's taken the risk down on a crop failure by X amount of percent. I mean, the banker is going to be a lot more easy to get along with then.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just this morning putting something together for our advanced soils clinic, and I talked about this briefly when we were in Grand Forks yesterday, but in the fall of 2011, we put some drain tile in. The next year, we put some elemental sulfur on a field, and within 2 years, and I'll show this data at our advanced soils clinics, we changed the pHs from the low eights down to the ideal range, 6.3 to 6.8. Our productivity has virtually doubled now versus prior to putting the tile in, putting the elemental sulfur on, doing all the other things that we're doing. And there are more things I can do yet based on soil test data. So it's a lot of fun when you try something, you invest the money, you see the results. But yeah, having the data to prove it is helpful for, you know, anybody like the insurance company that you're talking about.
No, and I think that's going to be changing. I mean, it's going to be game-changing for the industry, because then if farmers can utilize, because the issue has been, you know, Brian, is people say, well, what's all this data good for? And
right.
If at the end of the day, part of that data enables you to get better coverage at lower rates, or, you know, better, more financing at a lower percentage, you know, you don't need to get a couple of bucks an acre for your data to think that you've gotten value. I mean, those type of decisions through insurance and farm lending, that's a huge change for a farming operation.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, real quick, Wade, I've got about a minute left here, but I wanted to talk to you about the Farmer's Edge offering with satellite imagery, because now it's going to be daily satellite imagery. You've been talking to farmers all winter long, I assume. What have they been saying? What's the response been to that?
I mean, guys are, I would say, a little bit shocked. And when we start showing, you know, some of the things that we've seen through the growing season about, you know, areas where they've had issues with cutworms, and we can show them that, look, we could have identified that, you know, a day after the cutworms got in the field. We're even seeing areas where, you know, there's been double planted, and we're able to identify that, you know, a day or two after it's done. I think guys are shocked, but I think we are a little bit too. The more we dig into it, the more stuff we see, I think the more Farmer's Edge is amazed by what this data can do.
So how can a farmer learn more about your offering? Because you do have a free offering out there for daily satellite imagery too.
Yeah, I mean, they can go into our website and find, you know, one of our reps and connect with them. Or actually, I know Hefties has been a big supporter of us as well. And you can reach out to any of the Hefties locations. I mean, our view is, you know, take us up on this free offer, see what this data can do. And at the end of the day, it'll sell itself, and you don't have any risk in making a commitment if you just want to test this out.
All right. Well, again, we've been talking to Wade Barnes with Farmer's Edge. Wade, thanks a lot for the time today. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Well, stay tuned. There's more Ag PhD Radio coming up right after this.
Few products work with you as well as Impact Herbicide. It's the standard in corn safety, and Impact delivers the power you want and the results you need. That's why Impact is the only post-emergence partner in the Roundup Ready Plus Corn Incentive Program. It's the choice solution with Roundup WeatherMax or PowerMax Herbicide for outstanding control of the new super weeds, resistant species of water hemp, Palmer Amaranth, Mayor's Tail, Kochia, and so much more. Ask your AmVac sales rep about the herbicide that works with you and for you. Impact. Always read and follow label directions.
Farmers value their independence. So does FMC. We understand the freedom to choose the best products for your fields is key to your operation's success. With the exclusive agronomic and economic incentives of the new FMC Freedom Pass program, you're free to choose your favorite seed and protect your crops all season long with proven FMC products. To learn more, visit fmcagus.com/FMC Freedom Pass or contact your authorized retailer today. Always read and follow label directions.
Commodity Classic is where America's best farmers come to get even better, and thousands of them will be headed to Anaheim, California, February 27th through March 1st to experience the latest innovation, education, and inspiration that are changing agriculture. And this year, Commodity Classic is on a Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, so you can tack on a weekend on either end, or both, for a little R&R. Enjoy some serious farmer time in Anaheim at the 2018 Commodity Classic, February 27th through March 1st. Discover more at commodityclassic.com.
The future of farming is the number one priority for AgroLiquid. That's why our family-owned company remains focused on providing environmental stewardship along with cost-effective crop nutrition. AgroLiquid manufactures and distributes high-efficiency liquid fertilizer formulated to protect nutrients from loss to the environment. Continuous research and product improvement and an ethical business model keep AgroLiquid focused on its mission. To prosper the farmer, visit agroliquid.com to learn more.
Are there nutrients trapped in your soil? Unlock them with Tag Team LCOXC Liquid Soybean, a biological seed treatment that can help improve nutrient access with three powerful technologies: a nitrogen-fixing rhizobia, the LCO molecule, and a microbe that releases bound phosphate. Together, they help unlock nutrients that support root and shoot growth. Learn more at MonsantoBioAg.com/unlock.
Looking to build your next farm structure, hobby building, garage, or even a home? No matter the building style, you'll want to partner with Morton to build it. With more than 110 years' experience, Morton Buildings provides the experience and quality you need in your new structure. And now, build your Morton for less during Morton's annual sales event. Hurry! These promotional prices end February 28th. Check us out online at MortonBuildings.com to learn more. Morton Buildings. For work, for life, for generations.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton studio today. It's mailbag day. We get a lot of questions in the Ag PhD mailbag. We're going to get to a number of those here throughout the rest of the show. If you'd like to call in, 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us a question, radio@agphd.com. Brian, I just handed you a soil test one. Can I read that question? I'll start with that. Do you have time to look through that or not?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. This one comes from Len up in Ontario, Canada. He said, I took these samples from a farm of mine with a 12-inch soil probe, and I'm wondering if you guys could help me out. I listen to your show every day and really appreciate it. Hey, thanks a lot, Len. We appreciate the question.
Yep. Okay. So first thing we look at is soil pH. pH is a little high. Not terrible, but you're 7.3 to 7.6, and it depends a lot on what crop we're talking about here. Did we find it? Did you see anything? Oh, yeah, soybeans. So we're saying soybeans. So the ideal pH for soybeans, 6.3 to 6.8, something like that. It's just a little high where we're at now. So then we move on to cation exchange capacity. We see it's relatively light soil. You're talking 8 to 13 CEC, so to get to be heavy soil, it's around 20, so it's a little bit lighter soil, around 2.5% organic matter. Then we go to base saturation, and that's one of the biggest issues is we've got very low potassium. So for soybeans, they need a tremendous amount of potassium at their peak. So we're talking 1.4 to 1.6% base saturation K. Ideally, we want that. Well, I shouldn't even say ideally. At a minimum, we want that 4%. Ideally, we'd love to see that at 6% to 8%. So the potassium is really, really low. Then we move on to nitrogen, which we don't need to talk much about since it's soybeans. But phosphorus I go to and I see, hey, I got a little higher pH. I look at the Olson test or bicarbonate P test. And I see 17 to 33 parts per million. Not terrible. Not great, but not terrible. But definitely we're going to need some more phosphorus. And then we start looking at the micronutrients, and this is where we're sulfur and micronutrients, and this is where I'm lacking in data. Sulfur levels are kind of at the low end of things, not horrible. Zinc's not horrible. Manganese is low, but I don't have an iron number, don't have a copper number, don't have a boron number. We just need more information. So that's the real quick. And by the way, as quickly as I went through that, that's a lot of times what I do for looking at soil tests. I just got another soil test here from our own farm from fall on this same field I was talking about just a few minutes ago, where we tiled it, lowered the pH, changed things. I mean, it only takes me maybe 30 seconds tops, and I just stepped through it 1 through 12. We talk about that a lot at our soils clinics.
All right, get a question here. This one didn't have a name attached to it, but he said, my question is, I'm wondering if some farmers also have day jobs instead of just farming full time. What other kinds of things do farmers do? And do you see a lot of arrangements?
Yes. yes. I really wonder what the number is, Darren, but I'd be willing to bet you that more farmers than not have off-farm jobs. There are a lot of farmers that they do some farming and then they do something else on the side. Many, many different jobs, all walks of life. So it doesn't matter what your other job is. I've seen all kinds of things, and people like to farm. I mean, even people who you would say, oh, wow, they have a really high-paying job that you might call a professional job, doctor, lawyer, whatever, well, they still like to farm. That's just something they really like to do. So it could be really anything.
All right. Thanks for the question. We appreciate that. Got a few questions here from Randy in Illinois. And Randy said, well, first of all, I attended your soils clinic last year when you were in Murray, Kentucky. And I had some questions here. I got a couple of soil tests that I attached. And we did apply some lime in the fall of 2016. We put on 2 tons an acre. I'm just wondering how often I should lime, how long that's going to last. That would be one of the questions anyway.
Okay. Well, first of all, we want very, very, very fine lime. If you have that and you put the right amount on, we should be done. If you properly manage all the rest of your nutrients and that field and we never overapply things, we're done. We should not have to change anything else. We shouldn't have to be liming constantly, you know, every few years. But number one, I'm looking at the lime source. If we've got a very fine lime, you're going to change the pH much faster, much greater, and much more permanently. And two, I'm looking at, are we overapplying nitrogen or other nutrients that are driving our pH down continuously? The second thing that I would say, I mean, just looking at the soil test at first glance, I'd say your potassium is ridiculously low. You got to get more potassium out there. Your phosphorus is really, really low. Your zinc's low. I mean, you've got a number of things here that need to be worked on. Now, the good news is you got relatively light soil. It's not going to cost that much money to change all these things. So, I mean, many of the things where I say, oh, hey, we're really, really low on this, that, whatever, we're not going to spend a lot of total dollars.
All right. Randy said that one thing that he hasn't been able to find is manganese sulfate. He said, my local supplier doesn't handle that. Is that common? Do you
nope.
find that as you go around the area?
No.
And
just call some other suppliers. Plenty of people have that. Or there are many other sources of manganese as well.
All right. He said you did mention using calcitic lime that would even
we were just talking about manganese sulfate a week ago on the radio show, I should say, and we had Neil Kinsey on, and he said, just make sure you don't get manganese oxysulfate. Make sure you get manganese sulfate. Manganese oxysulfate might not do it for you. So get manganese sulfate.
All right. He also sent a lime sample of a calcite powder that's 92% calcium and 5% magnesium, and it made it through a 300 mesh screen.
Great. Sounds good to me.
It sounds like that would be a good product.
Except for what's the cost?
Yeah, if it's a powder, that might be difficult for you to handle, but you sure can. You sure can do that, so you just have to find a day that's not super
windy.
Yeah,
but my question is, what's the cost?
It looks like $290 a metric ton.
Oh. Even so, so you're talking $290 a metric ton? Yeah, so I'm not using that.
Yeah, Sounds a little expensive.
Yeah.
All right, well, thanks for the questions, Randy. Really appreciate that. Okay, now, I got two questions, Brandon. I wanted to do these back-to-back, so let me read both of them.
By the way, on his powder stuff, that might be fine for a really short-term, banded, whatever, but that's really a lot of money. So, I mean, unless I had like a garden, you know, a tenth of an acre or 1/100th of an acre, I'm not going to spend that kind of money on big acres. Sorry.
All right. Now, this one came from the same person. And these two emails came 5 days apart here. We haven't gotten to them yet. One of them just came in a couple of days ago here. One question, do you guys talk about any heavy clay soils for planting tillage and whatnot?
Yep.
The other one said, do you talk about planting and tillage and whatnot for not just clay?
Yep,
do you talk about for other soils?
Well, everything.
Yeah, we do look at all different soils, and there are different considerations. Now, when you think about wet soils, if you've got pure sand, it's probably not staying wet all that long in most cases, although you could have a super, super high water table. It seems to be more of a chronic issue in really heavy clay soils. But sure, there are issues, whether it's lighter ground or heavier ground.
Even on our own farm, we have ground that's as low as 7, 9 CEC, somewhere in there, and ground that's 45 plus CEC. So we go from very sandy to super, super heavy ground. So, yeah, I mean, even that's just on our own farm. That's not even talking about the thousands of farmers we consult with around the country. So, yeah, I mean, we deal with it all.
Okay, next one. This one comes from, it says farmer in Mississippi. All right, he said, I've got a question
Darren
for you
well prepared
on fungicides. And well, I was just looking, and I saw the name Alex, but that's our producer. He had forwarded this to me. Okay, so he said, I've got a question pertaining to early fungicide sprays in wheat, and I'm wondering, do you prefer Preaxor, Stratego, or Nexicor? And then in the flag leaf stage, which of those do you prefer, and what rates would you be using?
I really like Nexicor because I like the price point and the fact that it's three modes of action. We were just talking today. I was just talking to a company today that's got a new product out or a new combination out that's got the active ingredient from Quadris, the active ingredient from Folicure, and then Mancozeb. So, I mean, that combination looked really good. We had some trials out with that last year. Which one you pick isn't that big a deal, but personally, I like Nexicor. Preaxor and Stratego are great products too, though.
All right, we'll get back with more of your questions right after this. Stay tuned.
Grow your incentives, not weeds. Earn an additional $6 per acre in cash back when you apply Xtendimax herbicide with Vapor Grip technology on your Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans, along with endorsed herbicides from Roundup Ready Plus Crop Management Solutions. Visit growyourincentives.com to see your total incentives opportunity. Xtendimax is a restricted-use pesticide. Individual results may vary. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
AgriLiquid knows farming is tough, especially going into planting season. So many decisions and not enough time. Fertilizer is a big investment that's too important to risk. Make your crop nutrition strategy our problem. Make the most of your fertilizer dollar with AgriLiquid. You can count on AgriLiquid to provide the products, compatibility, and application flexibility you want and the research-proven results you need. Visit AgriLiquid.com to find a retail partner near you.
When it comes to your corn, you can't cut corners on weed control. But what if you could get a great foundational control and a great value? Now you can with Balance Flex pre-emergence herbicide and its new lower price. Balance Flex provides a flexible foundation that complements any herbicide program so yields are protected from the start. Talk with your Bayer retailer or visit balanceflex.us/save for a great value on early season weed control. Balance Flex from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
Every single weld, angle, bolt, bend, pipe, leg, truss, flange, seal, tire, gear, wire, gooseneck, and all the other parts of a Renke pivot have been engineered for maximum durability. It's why we have the longest warranties in the business. Year after year, season after season, a Renke is designed to perform and match your expectations. To learn more, contact your local dealer or visit Renke.com. That's Reinke.com today.
Avoid the V-shaped pattern of injury caused by chemical buildup in your booms. The Express End Cap from Hypro eliminates the dead ends that lead to herbicide buildup and provides easy access to your booms, giving a complete flush between applications. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Interested in strip tillage? You should know about the Soil Warrior from ETS. With one-pass efficiency, optimized nutrient placement, and reduced production costs for higher profitability, the Soil Warrior brings the future to your farm. Visit SoilWarrior.com to learn more.
Farming in the dark? We've flipped the switch on. More insights, more options for more farmers. Introducing Smart Insight daily satellite imagery, on-farm weather stations, crop modeling, scouting, alerts, available in more locations than ever before. Smart Insight, the only crop monitoring and digital agronomy solution with daily insights. Visit farmersedge.ca for details.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. It is Mailbag Day. We're taking your calls and questions throughout the whole show here. Just before the break, we took a question about wheat fungicides, asking about Preaxor, Nexicor, and Stratego specifically. Typically, when we're early in the season, because part of the question was, what about early spray versus late? early in the season, a lot of times we're using a half rate because we have such small plants out there. We're getting more than a full rate amount of product on the leaves compared to using a full rate at a big, large plant. So we're getting more of a concentration on leaves. That's why we're going with the lower rates. And you'll see that on labels too with these products. Typically, I think 2 ounces for Preaxor, 3.5 ounces for Nexacor, or 5 ounces for Stratego early. Then double those rates, 4 ounces of Preaxor, 7 ounces of Nexacor, and 10 ounces of Stratego later in the season, like flag leaf application, for example, as you mentioned here. And then anything that has a strobel urine type product in it, we wouldn't use after flag leaf. Then we're just using triazoles once we get to heading and so forth. So anyway, thanks for the question on the fungicide use in wheat. Got one here. This just came in from Evan. And okay, here you go, Brian. It looks like a math one. Evan says, we have 2 co-ops that we could use to spread our potash. Now we're trying to decide where we get the best bang for the buck. One uses an 0060. The other is an 0062. Now in your clinic, you talked about 0060 potash being actually only 50% K. Do I use a different calculation for the 62, or is all this negligible and we should just figure it's the same stuff?
Okay, well, first of all, it might be the same stuff. If you really want to, I mean, the way to verify that is get a sample of each, send it in for analysis, and then let's find out. So that's the first thing that I would tell you. Then you know for sure. The next thing I would say is the conversion is still 1.2. So to convert K to K2O, you simply multiply times 1.2. Or the other way, if you're converting K2O down to K, then you divide by that figure. So let's see. I mean, when you're simply running that math, I mean, 60% versus 62% K2O, it's very, very close. But yes, if a one had 2% more K2O in there, then you got to figure, okay, well, if it's got more, then I can actually pay a little bit more. But again, I don't know for sure if you're getting 0062 or 0060, or maybe it's 0059. I don't know what it is. And you probably, well, you really don't either until you actually test it. So that's what I would say.
All right. Well, thanks for the question, Evan. Really appreciate that. Got one from Chris here, and he said, working with a farmer who's considering using some biosolids, we are in western Kansas. There are some heavy metals that are involved according to the test, and according to KDHE, they're safe up to a certain use.
Kansas Department of Health, I assume?
Just guessing.
Okay.
He said they're safe up to a certain use rate. Now, I was wondering if there are any agronomic cautions using biosolids with measurable amounts of things like lead.
Yeah, but the last time I checked, Kansas Department of Health has no farm ground that they personally farm, right? I don't know that they do testing on the farm. So in terms of is it safe, it may be safe for the environment, and that's what they're testing. The question is it safe for your crop? And that much I can't tell you. I don't know exactly. I would say you maybe want to talk to some soils labs. I don't have personal experience with that, but I would just say this. Anytime we're dealing with heavy metals, yes, a few are probably fine in most cases, depending on what the heavy metal is. We don't want to overdo it, obviously. Otherwise, we can kill our soil, kill our crops. I mean, that's bad news. And, you know, contaminate the environment. So, yeah, I'd work real closely with some soils labs, talk to some experts, maybe some university people. But I don't know what the proper level is. I do know, however, that there are a lot of biosolids being spread all across the country safely, being used very effectively by even really high-yield farmers. So it absolutely can be done. Always remember, the dose makes the poison. So as a general statement, if we can keep the dose down, then we're usually in pretty good shape.
Thanks for the question, Chris. Got one here from Tracy who writes, I've got a couple questions about Treflan. I know it's very volatile, should be incorporated immediately, as in the sprayer could be mounted right on the tillage tool. However, I'm not set up for that, so I'm wondering, would spraying after dark help reduce volatility? I'd spray a field, have someone start digging right away behind me, but by the time I finished spraying, the digger would be a couple hours behind
me. I don't really use the word volatility in that case, and maybe that's the proper term. I just use, hey, it's got a high vapor pressure. Maybe we're talking the same thing. But either way, the point is you're going to start losing it very quickly. So yes, we always talk about, hey, if it's a cloudy day, if it's cool, those two things are absolutely going to help. So obviously, if it's at night, that's just like clouds. That will help. I will also say, when I look at the price for myself on our farm and I go, I can spend $4 on trifluralin or I can spend $10 on Prowl, I say, well, that's $6 an acre and I got 1,500 acres of soybeans. That's a lot of money. Do I want to save $9,000? Is it worth the risk? And maybe it is. But the point is, we've got to get it covered as quickly as we can. So yes, I'm all for, I'm fine with, if you want to spray it, work it in, understand you're probably going to lose just a little bit. You might want to bump the rate 5, 10%, something like that, as long as it's still on label. And that's what I would consider doing. Otherwise, if it's going to be a few days before you get back, Prowl is absolutely the way to go. It does not have the high vapor pressure that trifluralin does.
All right, the other thing, Tracy had two other comments. She said, I asked an extension weed scientist about spraying Treflan after dark. Didn't really get an answer, mostly because I don't think she grasped the concept of working after dark, which I find hilarious. But the other thing is, Tracy said, we always used to work the ground twice after spraying Treflan, going 4 inches deep the first time, 2 inches deep, and in a different direction the second time.
Yep.
Is that still the protocol?
Well, I mean, yes, that would be the best way to make it work. But fortunately, today we have a lot of rescue options, and we're usually putting something else with the trifluralin, like a Valor or Authority plus Metribuzin. So I will just tell you, trifluralin on our farm, we don't work it twice anymore. We just work it once. I'm trying to reduce tillage, number one, and save money, number two. And I have a built-in kind of rescue program, number three. So I don't need 100% effectiveness out of trifluralin like I used to. So that's a big part of it. The other thing that I was going to mention, with working the ground at night, there have been some studies out there showing that you will have fewer weeds when you work ground at night as opposed to working ground in the daylight. And the reason why is because certain weed seeds can begin that process of germination by seeing even a tiny glimpse of sunlight. So I just throw that out there too. It's a minor thing, but if you want to work ground at night, spray at night, work at night, I have no problem with that.
All right, thanks for the questions, Tracy. Really appreciate that. Got a comment here mainly from Joe, and Joe's in Illinois, and he said, I wanted to thank you. I attended one of your soils clinics in Davenport, and I wanted you to know this. I come from a post of facility manager of a local co-op, and I left there a year ago because I felt like they had lost their focus on customer needs. I can tell you in my over 20 years of experience, there's virtually no one discussing fertilizer needs beyond N, P, and K like you guys do. I believe at least a large part of this is based on their inability to do the things that you talked about today. Most of the local guys, at least in Illinois, will not be able to practically introduce this within the system because they've got dry P and K in mass storage and they're sent through a distribution center where only 0060, MAP, and MEZ products are options. There is no blender to mix low rates of micros or micronutrient bins to even apply it. The system I worked with serviced over 125,000 acres, and the only micronutrient solution they had was Mosaic's MEZ product, and actually they've now removed the MEZ product because they had no ability to sell any additional value of the zinc in the product. Joe, I find that very interesting and also kind of sad.
Yeah.
That it isn't even an option for a lot of guys, and that's why you're not hearing about it. This is why it's so important to learn how to read your own soil test, make your own recommendations, and figure out what your yield limiting factors are so you can start making more money.
And you can do a lot of these jobs yourself on the farm. Spreading fertilizer is very easy. Buying a fertilizer spreader is inexpensive. Setting it up for variable rate, easy. You can do that with strip till. You can do that with liquid fertilizer. A lot of different ways to go. Lots of good options out there. But yes, you need micronutrients.
All right, don't forget to tune in tomorrow to our radio show. We're going to be talking about estate planning, specifically looking at farm estates and how you can set things up. Thanks for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.